fantastic. Food.
Now to cut it.
Crispy skin.
Tablespoon.
2 eggs.
Sugar.
Delicious.
Fresh red wine.
Great to eat.
Vitamin C.
Low cooking.
Fresh.
2UE's Fresh for Sydney Markets.
Cheers.
Hey, cheers yourself. Hello, Lindy Milan.
Hello, Tim Webster. How are you on this fine day?
I'm good. You're a well and happy person?
I'm a very well and happy person.
Okay. All right. Tell you what, we're going to do some really good stuff today. We're going to talk to a chef in Melbourne, are we not?
We are.
It is Bacon Week again, starting, well, it's this week, actually. We'll talk about that. And we're going to go down to talk about Open Table. Now, Open Table's interesting, isn't it? That's a great concept, that.
It is. It is. It started from someone whose wife was frustrated trying to book a table.
Yeah.
So it's all about booking restaurants and the like. But the research is really interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, Australians are very early adopters of technology.
Indeed.
And it seems we are using our mobile phones and tablets a lot.
We are.
In restaurants and researching them. So we thought it would be fun to talk to someone about that.
I have an app on the mobile phone for takeaway.
Oh, well, there you go.
Like that. And good takeaway too. Well, let's not be disparaging to anybody. But before we do anything else, let's talk about what's good and fresh and beautiful at the markets. And here is the lovely Sue Dodd. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Lindy.
Hi, Sue.
Now, Sue, would I be correct in saying that the parsnip is not probably a sexy vegetable? Can I put it that way?
That probably a lot of people are not
familiar with
it. Lindy Milan's
disagreeing with me violently.
I love them. And I've just been buying baby parsnip lately
and
roasting them.
Oh.
Oh, they are gorgeous. And I've just been looking at the list and I just think winter is such a great time for root vegetables.
In the soup.
And some of the others. Yeah.
I totally agree, Lindy. I just think with Tim's view, I think a lot of people do think they're unsexy. I think they are absolutely a favourite of mine at this time of the year.
There
I love them roasted with pork, served with pears. They make a beautiful soup.
Ooh.
And just, you know, even served in casseroles, you know, they're just lovely.
Okay. Well, you're giving new ideas. Always put them in the soup.
Roasted and with pears and pork.
Okay.
Roast the pears as well, not for as long.
Mm.
Oh, delicious. You don't need a sauce.
Roast, parsnip, pears and pork.
Yeah.
The three P's. Beautiful.
Beautiful combination.
And not expensive? No.
No, not really. I mean, the large parsnips will be about $8 to $9 a kilo, and the smaller little parsnips will be about $3 to $5 a kilo. So, you know, there's a price point there for everybody.
Indeed. Now, your beautiful crunchy celery, that should be in the soup too.
Oh, look, it's just indispensable at this time of the year, celery, whether it's a soup, a stir fry, a casserole, plenty of it around. And this week, you know, and depending on the size of the bunch, will be about $2 to $4.
And, you know, I cut off the top and make that into the soup and keep the bottom to eat raw.
There you go. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a great way to do it. I mean, I never throw away the leaves either. I always keep them in a plastic bag in my freezer, and then when I want to make stock, I've got them there ready to go.
Oh, no, I put them in the soup. That's how I make the soup, the whole top.
Oh,
and they sell celery with the top cut off for the same price. I think it's crazy. Make the top into soup, use the bottom.
Good.
Yeah, there's no waste.
You come up with a fantastic idea or 50 every week.
I can't bear wasting things.
No. I'm with you there. And Brussels sprouts and, in the soup. But I love Brussels sprouts with a roast dinner.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I always put a little bit of chorizo or bacon or something like that with them. Or I had them with chestnuts the other night.
Beautiful combination, Brussels sprouts and chestnuts. While you're away, Lindy, I also brought Tim in some of the purple Brussels sprouts that are around at the moment. They're really pretty, and they've got a lovely, slightly little peppery flavour to them, but really pretty to look at. They're about $3 to $4 for a 400-gram packet, so keep an eye out for those. They're delicious.
Yeah, and they were yum. Now, we talk about mushies a lot, but in a risotto, absolutely, yeah.
And that's your favourite, isn't it? We love a risotto, and mushrooms and risotto rice just seem to go so well. That really rich umami flavour, just they complement each other so well. So this week, your buttons, cups and flats, about $10 to $12 a kilo.
Yeah, we've got collies there too, and we've got leeks as well. We know about them. Now, you brought me in too, Sue, and it's a really interesting vegetable. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Celeriac?
Celeriac,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a favourite of mine at this time of the year.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't a vegetable. It's not very pretty, I suppose. It's a knobbly-looking round. Looks about the size of a baseball, maybe a bit bigger. It's knobbly. But, you know, you peel away the outer skin, and it's just a beautiful, creamy, celery-flavoured root vegetable.
It sure is,
You know why I like it? Because unlike potatoes that you can't mash in the food processor because you end up with clagged glue, is that with celeriac or indeed parsnip, you can just steam them and then throw them in the food processor and you get a beautiful mash.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. It makes a beautiful creamy mash, but you can also eat it raw as well. So, you know, you can shred it really finely. Pickling's popular at the moment, or just even just finely shred it and put it through some lovely mayonnaise, a little bit of mustard, and it's a lovely thing to serve maybe on the side of, say, some chicken schnitzel or something like that.
Yeah, no. Would you put your celeriac parsnip and with the potatoes and make mash?
Yes, but you can't really whiz the potatoes because it changes.
Yeah,
it changes.
It goes gluey.
Yeah, it goes gluey.
Okay.
You'd have to mash them by hand.
All right, scratch that idea. Now, fruit, we know about the oranges and mandarins at this time of the year. They're lovely. Now, pomegranates?
Yes, very popular, the pomegranates. I'll just, the flavour, the colour, just really does jazz up something that you sprinkle those seeds over. I've even been having them over porridge for breakfast. I think it's a lovely way of just adding some vitamin C and a bit of texture to breakfast cereal. So, you know, $3 to $5 each for the lovely pomegranates at the moment. Yeah.
I think it makes anything look luxurious, and they remind me of jewels.
Yes.
And, you know, you just do a slow-roasted lamb and then, you know, maybe with some Middle Eastern spices like cumin and coriander and put pomegranates over the top. Amazing. Immediately you've got a restaurant quality dish and all you've done is add the pomegranates.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
Yeah, and as far as, God, I tell you what, they look fantastic, the mandarins at the moment. They really look lovely. They are.
But
yeah.
Tim, we have to ask the question.
Yeah.
You're away next week.
Eaten two of them already.
And how were they?
They're a little bit tart, I have to confess. They're not. I don't know what I did wrong, but I did fertilize. I did everything wrong, and they're in a sunny spot, so it should work. But the only my defence is it's a young mandarin tree.
Right.
It's pretty young. Yeah. Okay. But no, they're right.
We won't pull it out just yet.
No. Well, I've got to eat them, otherwise it's the whole thing's a waste of time, isn't it? And pears too. Before we leave fruit.
Plenty of pears around at the moment. Beautiful Packham pears, the Berbos pears, which are just lovely for poaching. You'll find most pears will be around about $3 to $4 a kilo at the moment.
Yes, your parsnips, pears and pork.
There you go. I have to say, I've had some magnificent avocado just recently.
Oh,
and the
great.
Price has come down.
They have. It has, yes.
Price has come down to about $1.50 to $4 each, and the quality has been exceptional. I mean, you know, I think when we teach everybody how to maybe test for the ripeness of an avocado, only just gently pressing at the top end around the stem, not squeezing the whole avocado, because no one wants to come back and take that one home that everybody's squeezed. So
no,
be gentle, and we'll all make sure we get lovely, fresh, bruised, free avocado.
Our beautiful avos. And there's apples around and rhubarb and Granny Smiths that we talk about. And flowers always, Sue? Flowers always?
Stunning flowers at the moment. I mean, winter you see such a different selection, but the poppies at the moment are so cheerful. Daffodils and jonquils. Snapdragons will be, you know, in around. So shortly, there's freesias, tulips, daisies, and the lovely hyacinths, which you can buy as a cut flower or in a pot, and then you can just watch them emerge from the pot. They're really lovely.
Yeah.
I have poppies on my dining room table.
There you go.
Oh, that's lovely.
Now, Sue, before you go anywhere, Coral's got a question for you. Hi, Coral.
Hi. How do you get the seeds out of the pomegranate easily?
How do you get the seeds out of the pomegranate? Sue, we've lost Sue. Do you know, Lindy?
Oh, okay. Yes, I'll tell you. I don't know about easily. There's two ways of doing it. You can either cut the pomegranate in half, and what you do, I would make sure your sink's clean, and I would put down a tea towel or some plastic wrap or something and just bash them cut side down with a wooden spoon.
Okay.
And they'll come out the other way, which I'm actually erring towards because it makes less mess, is to cut them in half or even quarters, put them in a bowl of water and just pull apart the white bits and get the seeds out that
Fries
way.
Fries it out with your thumbs.
But in the water it seems to help and they don't fly everywhere.
And doesn't it take a lot of the flavour out though?
No, it doesn't actually. I think they're quite They're quite well self-contained, those seeds. They don't seem to be too porous.
Oh, yeah, I was just worrying in the juice and stuff, yeah. Mm. No, that's brilliant. Thank you. And Tim, I'll see you Tuesday.
Yeah, see you then, Di.
Oh, okay. Thanks for ringing.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, right. We're all looking forward to Tuesday. On the big bird we are, the big silver bird. And Sue's actually back there. So you got anything to add to the pomegranate de-seeding?
Oh, no, sorry, Tim, I missed that conversation.
Yes.
I find it really easy just to cut them into quarters. I'm not one to give them a bash over a bowl. I just find you end up wearing most of the juice.
That's what I said. I cut them in quarters and actually soak them in water and find it easier to get them out then.
It's really easy just to roll them out. I do think there's some different varieties of pomegranates and some a little easier than others, but I usually just like to cut them in quarters or cut them in half and then turn them inside out and they just gently jump out of the skin anyway.
All right. Good on you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fixed coral up. Now, we'll take a little break. Now, we've got brownie recipe.
We have, yeah. But a really good healthy one. And Sue Dodd's going to like this because instead of having sugar in it, we've got some vegetable and fruit.
All right, hold that thought. We'll do it after we take a break. Oh, healthy, is it what? Look at these lovely ingredients in this. Ooh, nice. All right, so Lindy's recipe. We're going to talk all sorts of food. And any questions you want to ask, by all means, love to get them on 13 13 32 of Lindy.
2UE's Fresh for the Sydney Markets Fresh Awards. Go to freshawards.com.au.
Yeah, we're speaking with Teague Ezard. Is it Teague?
It is Teague.
He's a chef, ginger boy in Melbourne. We're going to have a yarn to him about his endeavours. But let's do this beautiful-looking recipe first, Lindy.
Right. Well, we had quite a few of the callers last week who were interested in low sugar.
Yes.
And I mentioned this friend of mine who runs something called Low Sugar Lifestyle. So I've asked her, because she's a nutritionist, and then I know it's all balanced and tested and measured. And we've got a brownie. She calls it, well, Hello Brownie. Full of nothing nasty. Now, it's really clever. So what you're going to do is whisk together 3 tablespoons of ground flaxseed. That's very good for your heart, by the way, with 1/4 cup plus an extra 2 tablespoons of water, 90 mils of water. Then let that sit for 15 minutes just to soften up. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to steam a couple of beets, a couple of beetroot. Right. And when they're steamed, then you're going to, while they're steaming, put some oats. So we're going to use 1 cup of oats, and you can use gluten-free if you like, if you want to do that. Process them till they become the texture of flour, only about a minute. Then add in 1/4 cup of walnuts and 6 pitted dates and blend until it's a paste. Now, you need your oven on at about 175. Now, drain off the water from the beets and add the beets to the food processor along with everything that you've already had, plus some cocoa nibs. Now, you can buy these now. This is what chocolate's made for, but it's in an unprocessed form.
Yeah,
1/4 cup of cocoa powder, 2 shots of espresso, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Then you're going to process it together. Then what you're going to do is you're going to put it in your pan that you can grease with butter or coconut oil, spoon it in, spread it out, bake it for 25 minutes. Now, that is amazing. There is no sugar in
there. There's no sugar in that.
No. There's sweetness. Sweetness comes, of course, from the dates, but you've only got 6 of them.
Yeah.
And then the beets.
Yeah.
So absolutely brilliant. And we've got an image of that that'll go up as well. But, you know, thank you to her, because I think everyone loves a brownie. Be a great one to make for the kids or the grandkids as well.
Yeah. And you can see that at ahealthyview.com. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
We'll also put that up on our website, and they're always up on Lindy's. Well, that's a fantastic recipe. That there's not an ounce of sugar anywhere near that.
Yeah.
But it's going to be lovely and sweet. Now, bless your heart, are we rating your DVD cover, are we?
We are. I thought we should do that. It's nothing like giving something to the listeners.
Yeah.
And that's Lindy Milan's Taste of Australia. And, of course, that's the series that just won Best Food TV Show in the World. I can't get over that. And so I want to say that it is going to be online. Lifestyle Food from 12:30 this Sunday. But, of course, not everybody's got Lifestyle Food.
No.
So if you're one of our listeners, the best question, I think, Tim.
Yes, I think so.
The best question that we have with someone ringing in or emailing.
Yeah, email. Any way you want to do it, and I'll leave that up to you and I'll keep right out of it.
Yeah, or it can be, you know, I can read your fridge or your pantry or
whatever.
You can tell me you've got a wine, just anything at all.
Yeah, anything you want to call us about, and we'll judge the best one, and we'll send you out this beautiful DVD, this A Taste of Australia, the winner, World Cookbook Awards. She still can't believe it, but I can. Now, here's Teague. Here's Teague Ezard. This is a fantastic thing. We just lost State of Origin.
I know, that wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't very good at all.
No, it wasn't very good. But Teague, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lindy. How are you?
G'day, Teague.
Look, I'm great. And, of course, Teague is a Melbourne-based chef, but, of course, you have got a foot in both camps. You've got Ginger Boy and Ezard in Melbourne, but you've got Black Boy Ezard, of course, at the Star.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, now, and we should say this is an idea, I'd say, that Luke Mangan came up with. Now, Luke, of course, is a Sydney boy now, but comes from Melbourne.
Mm.
And the idea is that it's, you know, Mojo does Melbourne. But look, forget all that. Teague, do you think there is a difference between the food styles of Sydney and Melbourne?
Mm.
Look, certainly I think the cities are very different in terms of their sort of culture, sport. It's very arts. I mean, it's very hard to put a difference really on a food. I think both cities offer a fantastic quality of food and certain style. And I think Look, I mean, obviously Sydney, you've got sort of bigger, larger restaurants. You've got the harbour, it's a magnificent view. Melbourne's sort of more of that sort of smaller restaurants. So probably slightly more boutique, but in terms of food quality, I don't think there's too much difference.
No, not in quality, but tell me, what do you think might be a typical Melbourne dish, and what do you think might be a typical Sydney dish?
Oh, gee, for Melbourne at the moment, it'd have to be beef cheeks with cauliflower puree and maybe some truffle oil, some fresh truffle.
Oh, leave the truffle oil away. And what do you think in Sydney?
Oh, look, anything with wood grilled prawns, really.
Seafood, absolutely.
A Rabata grill.
You got me.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny. So tell us about this event. There's a whole lot of you chefs coming up from Melbourne. Adrian Lee, Guy Grossi, and Electrolux Australian Young Chef of the Year. And, of course, I judge that competition every year, Jake Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you guys all doing together?
Yeah,
well, I mean, we're all sort of sharing the contents of the menu across entrees, canapes and dessert. But we're all sort of collaborating and sort of putting together one canapé each, which will be good. Then Adrian is doing an entree, as is Jake. Guy Grossi will be doing a main course, which is a short rib with Jerusalem artichoke, shallot and Warrigal greens.
Oh, yum.
And Luke and I will be sharing two desserts each. I'll be doing a kind of like a mango and passion fruit sago and sponge sort of dessert. And Luke will be doing his signature licorice parfait with lime syrup.
You know what? Before you said that, I was going to say, make me guess. I know that. I saw it the first time he ever served it, and I do love it. And, I ran that recipe in the Women's Weekly many, many years ago.
Well, he doesn't have to think about
But interesting, Guy's doing the short rib. I mean, I think, and it's winter, I think that's great. We can't always buy short ribs as consumers, so it's great to go to a restaurant where not only have you got hold of it, but you've spent those hours cooking it.
Yeah. That's right. And obviously a lot of work and love and care and detail goes into those beautiful second cuts this time of the year as well. So,
So where does the challenge come in?
Well, I didn't really know there was a challenge. I mean, Luke's the one who's obviously...
I bet there is.
Luke's the one that's put this together, and I think it's really four versus one.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. And, of course, it is on next Tuesday, the 28th of June, from 6:30 to 10:30. It's $170 per person, including four-course dinner and matching wines and cocktail and canapé on arrival.
Cheap
that's
at
right.
half the price. Absolutely.
So you can go to mojobylukemangan.com or you can ring 9002-5346. But, Teague, you've got something with oysters coming up at Black Bay Izzard.
Yes, we do. We've actually got an oyster caviar and champagne dinner, which we're doing this Sunday night, 7 p.m.
And is there still availability for that, do you know?
Yes, there's definitely still availability. So, if anybody would like to come along, certainly just jump on the Star website and there's certainly seats still available.
Yeah, is it the right time of year, do you think, for oysters? I suppose they're
any,
in season.
Any time of year.
Yeah, where are the oysters coming from?
These ones are from New South Wales, but obviously we sort of use oysters right throughout the southeastern continent at the moment, because obviously at the moment the oysters are a bit touch and go.
But
we just try and obviously use the best that we can that's available.
Well, oysters are one of the most ancient forms of aquaculture, which is agriculture, and agriculture's tough. You know, we run the Sydney Royal Oyster Aquaculture Competition, and sometimes, if there are a lot of rains just before the competition, they just can't enter their oysters because they're not satisfied that they're in their best condition.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that'd have to be the hardest farming in the food industry, wouldn't it, oysters?
Yeah, it is.
Very touchy.
Yeah, it is very touchy. And obviously with the oysters, they do have some farming issues because of the elements and sort of changing waters, but it's a beautiful product.
What I think about oysters and avocado? They're both perfect as they are. You've just got to open them.
And there they are,
absolutely perfect food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, mate, that's fantastic. So it's not really a challenge, but I bet it is if Mangan's involved. at Mojo, that's next Tuesday, and your place this coming Sunday.
Yes, that's right.
right.
Good on you, mate. Great
thanks,
to talk
Teague.
To you.
Thank you. Thanks.
That's Teague Ezard. Oh, there'll be a challenge, all right, if Luke Manger's involved. Now, just before we do take a break, now, don't forget, callers, 13 13 32, and the best one, we adjudge, give us a ring about anything at all to talk to Lindy. We'll send you out this DVD of Taste of Australia. Just a quick mention of Bacon Week, which is the end of it this weekend.
Well, yeah. It is the end of it this weekend, and last week we weren't allowed to say who the winners were.
No.
So this is for bacon, of course, made from Australian pork.
Yeah.
And the overall winner, Australia's Best Artisan Bacon, went to Zammit Ham and Bacon from Pendle Hill.
Great.
They also won in New South Wales for the full rasher. And I have to say, for the shortcut bacon, TAFE New South Wales
That's
won.
That's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think is absolutely fantastic. It shows that they're learning. And we should say you should also look out for exclusive meats at North Tarramurra, Brown's Butchery at Raymond Terrace for the full rasher. And you were talking about buying direct from your butcher.
You bet your life. German Butchery at Mona Vale. So they're the Sydney ones.
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic, that German Butchery at Mona Vale. And then there's one at Tenderfield. Yeah, so anyway, the main thing to remember is buy Australian.
Now, Lindy, I think Eddie might have some sort of psychic power because we were going to talk about learning about olive oil, and guess what Eddie wants to ask us. G'day, Eddie.
Hi. Hi, Tim. Look, I've got an olive tree, and I take off the olives, and I do what the in-depth tells me, to put them in a jar and put them in water, change the water every second day, and at the end of 6 months, they're bitter and they're awful.
Oh.
How do you calculate, how do you make them... eatable.
Well, what type of olives have you got? Have you got table olives or are they olives that should be used for oil?
I don't know. They're just green olives.
They're just green olives.
Probably
okay.
Table,
well, yeah. Well, yeah, they're not necessarily interchangeable, but they can be. So quite apart from the fact that you have to soak them, do you then brine them afterwards?
No.
Oh, okay. So I don't think you're doing the whole process.
If you grind them, isn't that to make the oil? I don't want to make oil.
No. Brine is a salt and water solution. You think about if you buy some olives from the shop.
Yeah.
They might be kept in oil, or very often they're in a brine, which is really a salt and water solution. So you do have to do the water first, but then you need to brine them. Where did you get your recipe from?
Oh, from the internet.
Right, I'll tell you what, there's a fantastic woman, Amanda Bailey, who runs the Australian Olive Centre.
Yeah.
And if you go online and just Google that, Amanda Bailey and Australian Olive Centre, if you take a photo of your olives and email her, she will be able to tell you what the variety is and she will also be able to tell you what to do.
Right.
She is just about the most passionate person I know about olives and would love to help you. But actually, you know, if you want to learn about olives, we were going to talk about this. You can actually learn how to judge olive oil on the 20th of July. It's from 10 till 3 at Sydney Showground, Olympic Park. It's $100. That includes lunch and equipment. And it's a course that's hosted by the Royal Agricultural Society head judge, a guy called Peter Olson. He's worked in the business for 28 years in primary industry. And he's an active member of the sensory panel. But this is just for all of the listeners, for anyone who wants to know about olive oil. And you can contact the Fine Food Coordinator Elizabeth Papalardo on 97041353 or email finefood@rasnewsouthwales.com.au. So that's anyone who wants to learn how to assess olive oil. But for you, my friend, definitely try Amanda Bailey.
Amanda Bailey,
Okay.
All right.
And good luck. And let us know how you get on.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I think the brine could be the secret there, couldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Eddie, you're going to go in the running for that lovely DVD of Lindy's called Taste of Australia. Any other calls? We'll judge the best one. I'd really love to do that myself, that olive oil appreciation. That's a fantastic thing. $100 for your lunch and the whole course. Yeah, that's...
And 5 hours.
That's Fine Food at rasnsw.com.au. Have a look at that and see if you'll be able to do that. It's a few weeks away. That's Wednesday, July 20. That's a really good thing.
Yeah.
10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Showground. All right, now, Open Table. We all might have a few comments here, I think.
I think we will. And, of course, we've got Lisa Hassan on, who's the Vice President for the Asia Pacific region. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Great,
Hi,
thanks. Lisa. Now, just first of all, tell us what Open Table is.
So Open Table is the global leader in online reservations platforms and also for front-of-house systems for restaurants. We've been in business just about 20 years, and we've been in Australia. We're just about to wrap up our 6th month.
Wow.
Right. But you've done some amazing research as well, and you've found that Australians are, shall we say, a little more enthusiastic than some other people about using social media when they're dining out.
Yes, I think that's a great word, enthusiastic. We're a culture that embraces things that are new and really we really run with it. Also, maybe more open than other cultures, very comfortable. I mean, almost half of the population is very comfortable with restaurants maybe wanting to know a little bit more about their diners and using the internet to do that, and also sharing their experiences very very vividly online through Instagram, Facebook, and all of the other social media channels.
Yeah, Lisa, tell me, what was the reason for you conducting this little survey into what we like and don't like here?
Well, I think it's just interesting within our industry because technology has really influenced the way that we make dining decisions and the way that we behave in restaurants. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not. And so I think it's important to understand that there is, what is the majority doing? How do they feel about it? And how is it developing? And how could that help restaurants, in a good way to, have advocates for their brand in a visual sense?
Yeah, I have to say, look, it's great too, because you can Google and you can find out if a restaurant's open, opening
fantastic.
Hours.
Yeah.
Maybe you can BYO from Monday to Thursday and all of that. And I have to say, I have really mixed views about this, though. I'm always astounded, especially when I see young people at a restaurant who aren't talking to each other, but they're all on their phones. Now, I have to say, as an old bag, I have my phone out because I'm turning the light on so I can read the menu.
That's called ambiance. It's ambiance.
Lindy, I want you to watch who you're calling an old bag.
It was me. It was myself. No.
I know, but you know what? We might be just about peers there. So.
Yeah. Oh, so we're both very youthful. But what do you think about the etiquette of using phones at the table?
So what I think is, first of all, being a very non-judgmental person, I think that when I see a generation really embracing something, that even if I may not want to do it, I'm very curious about it, and I want to understand that perspective and why it's important to them. When you go to dinner, I mean, dinner is supposed to be, or when you go to a restaurant, it's supposed to be about the company and the experience and the room you're in, but I also understand that a visual representation just communicates a lot of information. It also is a way of including people that may not be there. A lot of us want to remember stuff. Like, I was out to dinner last night, and I have a relative who's older than me, and she took a picture of the wine bottle because she thought it was really good. So,
yeah, right, yeah.
When does it become, when does etiquette say enough is enough? Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
And, like I said, I feel bad when I see people missing out on the full experience.
I tell you what I found interesting, and I'll tell you the story, because we've got a restaurant we go to, which we tend to go to celebrate birthdays. So, when I book, they say, is it somebody's birthday? But diners don't mind, do they, by and large, the restaurant knowing about all of your special events and what making offers to you or making something special on the night, that sort of thing?
Yeah, almost half of the population that was in this survey were very happy for the restaurant to know that if it was an anniversary or a birthday, meaning they're happy for them to acknowledge it.
Hmm.
They're not very private.
No.
But actually, I think that's great because there's nothing lovelier than when they might say, it's your anniversary, could I offer you a glass of champagne?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's lovely. And it's the beginning to building a relationship, because Tim just said, we go to a restaurant we tend to go to when we're celebrating. Mm. You've got a relationship with that restaurant.
That's right.
Go there because you'll have a good time and you'll be looked after. And I think that's really important. For me, when it comes to using the phone, because I'm a food professional, I tend to use it when I am out at an event and working and take photos and indeed of the wine bottle. But when I'm out personally, that's when I tend not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone has their own reasons for doing it. And a lot of times it's about the food on the plate might be really beautiful and somebody sees it as art, or they want to support the restaurant and they see it as a way to say, I was here and look at this beautiful dish. It could backfire for the restaurant if the photo isn't good. But one thing I did want to mention is that if you book with Open Table, as far as the building the relationship with the restaurant, you can actually put comments in. It's my husband's birthday. It would be lovely for us for you to do this or whatever it might be. And has nothing to do with looking for something for free, but you're giving them a chance to record that information and not forget it. Versus communicating it over the phone where it's harder to record.
Now, a lot of this is very interesting. You know, half of us eat at a casual restaurant at least once a week. Yeah, I reckon if you did that survey even 10 years ago, but certainly 20 years ago, it may be once a month.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. The, you know, restaurants have become the new kind of rock stadiums, and chefs and have become the new rock stars. And so it's really become a very overt form of entertainment. It's not just about dining on someone's birthday or once a year for Valentine's Day. Hardly, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I tell you what, I haven't gone there yet, but there's a lot of my friends who do on Facebook. People do love, don't they, taking pictures of their breakfast, lunch, dinner, and posting them on the social media.
Yeah, you know, I remember the early days of Facebook, and I was thinking about this today, that Facebook is, I think it's only 10 years old.
Yeah.
And so we were, I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing we were all kind of well into our adulthood when it came when it came to fruition, whereas my cousins in their 20s, it's something they grew up with.
Yeah.
But it used to be common for people to check in everywhere. And while Australians, by and large, do admit to checking in places, I think that's become a little, it's become less interesting, right, because everyone does it.
Mm.
And so we move on to the next thing, which is this kind of photographic journaling of our dining experience.
Yeah.
You know, you're just about spot on with the 10 years. My daughter moved to London 10 years ago, and that's why I joined Facebook, because she was far more likely to upload onto Facebook than email photos or send me emails about what she was doing. So that's great. But
very interesting. Yeah.
If we want to find out any more, we can go to opentable.com.au.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Lisa.
That's great.
That
was fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is fascinating. So what do you think about that? Give us a call about that, 13 13 32. I have never yet, I doubt I'll ever get around to taking pictures of any of my meals and posting them on Facebook. I just don't have the wherewithal. I'd take pictures of the dog and post her on Facebook. But do you do that? I mean, a lot of people do. A lot of my friends do. Look what I had for lunch.
Yeah.
And I also have mates who send me photos of their beer. I mean, big deal.
Well, I was very proud of myself because we've got a place down south and we grew these pumpkins. And I took a photo of this massive pumpkin and the kaffir lime leaves and the chilies that I grew because I was so proud of it. And I posted that on Sunday saying, I think I can feel a pumpkin curry coming on.
Yes.
And it got a bit of a response.
Yeah, but you just posted the picture of the veggies, not the meal.
Three. To UE's Fresh. For the Sydney Markets Fresh Awards, go to freshawards.com.au. To UE's
Fresh. All sorts of good things going on. Look, it's almost an every night thing, isn't it? As far as food and wine's concerned. We've got this little beauty here. It's July 5, so it's not that far away. Cheese and wine appreciation, yeah?
Yeah, well, look, I thought we'd do this because, of course, the Cheese Festival's on this weekend in the Hunter Valley. But if you haven't booked to go up there, here's one closer to home. So it's at Salt Meets Cheese at Thrive in Alexandria.
Right.
It's $105 a person, but then if you go, you're going to get a 15% off dine-in voucher as well for another time.
Nice.
Now, it's held from 6:30 to 8:30, so the idea is that you get expertise from both the cheese and the wine industries. So you've got Marley Schmittelschmidt, how's that for pronunciation?
Very good.
From Om Nom Cheese, and he does the cheese-making part, but also Michael Quirk, who I know very well, is a wine educator at McWilliams Wines, and he is a great presenter.
Mm.
So they're going to go along. They're going to start with some Evans and Tate sparkling on arrival, and the first matching cheese is a fresh buffalo mozzarella.
Mm.
Yum. Mm. Then 7 more cheeses and wines.
Wow.
And you know what I find fascinating with this is that people think, oh, yeah, cheese and red wine. You know, often it's not. I think if you've got a beautiful runny brie, a Chardonnay is gorgeous with it.
Doesn't have to be red.
Really gorgeous.
I tell you what, you think about that, folks, $105 bucks. Seven cheeses and seven wines cost you $15 for a glass of wine at the pub these days.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
It might be going over the top a bit, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right. Yeah, so that's $105. So saltmeatscheese.com.au for that one. So just all the one word, if you like. Salt meets cheese. You got me? Saltmeatscheese.com.au if you want to book for that one. And speaking of wine... Yes.
Well, speaking of wine, we like to talk about wine. I was thinking of this apropos the brownie, because often what I try to do is match the wine with the food. And, you know, you can get away with drinking red wine with chocolate. You know, you're certainly not...
Get away with it? Hello.
Yeah. The French like to put champagne with it. But no. So I thought I'd talk about Sangiovese because, you know, it's the classical Chianti variety of wine. And it's got, you know, and when it's described... The words that are used to describe it are tobacco, chocolate, and cherry. So chocolate and cherry. And yet it's got a bit of tannin, and that's the drying bit that comes down the sides of your tongue.
Yeah.
And that helps refresh your mouth. But there are Australian Sangioveses as well, of course. And so it's great with grilled herby meats and Mediterranean dishes and tomato-based pasta dishes. Well, after all, it is Italian. There's something about that. So what I did was I had a little look around to see what we could buy them for.
Okay.
So Coriol have long had Italian varieties in the McLaren Vale, and they've got one at $22.99. Pizzini, now this is interesting, the King Valley, a lot of Italians settled there and they were tobacco farmers. Well, we don't grow tobacco anymore.
No.
And they changed over to wine. So they do a lot of Italian varietals, $27.99. But then also in the King Valley, I came across Bella Riva at $13.99. So I thought that was pretty amazing. But, you know, when I was
very reasonable, yeah.
Tuscany recently, I, of course, went to the home of Sangiovese. And it was extraordinary. I was in the Fontodi vineyard and they do everything holistically.
Yeah.
So they have got cattle there and they feed them some of the clippings of the vines and then they use their waste as part of the compost that then they put in the vines, and it's brought all these this particular variety of cattle back, and they do it's just a complete whole ecosystem.
Yeah. Now listen, if you've missed the recipe, by the way, Lindy's talking about this hello brownie. The thing about this brownie is with that wine, there's no sugar in it. Absolutely no sugar. So the recipe's up on our website, also up on Lindy's website. I tell you what, though, they talk about what you shouldn't have with cheese. I love stickies with cheese.
Absolutely, especially blue cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful with a blue cheese. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, stickies and fortifieds.
Yeah, liqueur muscat or a port or something.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stunning, as long as you're not driving. Sadly.
No, they're no driving. Now, just before, there's a call coming through there, just before we get that, just tell us about that beautiful big book.
Oh, okay. Well,
there.
If you can lift it up.
Oh,
I thought we'd do something from Melbourne because we were talking to Teague. It's called Flavours of Urban Melbourne and it's a massive book. So it's not only talking about the places, but it's actually got it's got new venues and recipes, design and photography because there's been a previous one.
Yeah.
But there are 120 cafes, patisseries, fine dining restaurants, casual eateries, wine bars and breweries, and also some insights from Melbourne's top chefs.
Yeah.
And it's got their recipes in there, which I really like.
Yeah.
I think that is really gorgeous. So it's called... it is an investment at $80, but, I mean, how much would that weigh?
Oh, it's
2 kilos
at least.
Easily,
yeah, at least.
Easily. It's definitely a coffee table book from smudgeeats.com.au/bookshop, and $80 is the recommended retail price. But it's called, if you want to go to Melbourne and spend some time there, it's just lovely. And then you've got those recipes, and you can recreate things at home.
Oh, look, it's just a beautiful book. Well, we go to Melbourne for lots of things, don't we?
We do.
You know, Grand Prix, whether it's the Melbourne Cup, and if you're going for the weekend, and you've got this book, well, $80 for this. Folks, this is a beautiful book. Food books are just so gorgeous these days.
They are.
Lovely photography. As you say, some of their recipes are there. Just terrific.
And it's much more satisfying. I know you can Google things.
You can.
But there's something about having
a
book that you can hold.
Yeah,
I like to have them on the next to the bed, on the floor next to the bed, I read books like that. Absolutely.
Right. Okay, beautiful. All right, we're going to send Eddie your Taste of Australia.
We are.
Okay,
we are.
Well done, Ed. And that's that beautiful DVD, the winner of the World Cookbook Awards. All right, you can go out and enjoy the rest of the lovely day.
I certainly will. And Tim, we're going to miss you. Have a wonderful time.
Thank you. And
wonderful, wonderful time. And to all of the listeners who are going with you as well. I know they'll have a great time too.
Yeah, indeed. We'll have a good time. And you'll be with Susie Yates next week.
Fantastic. Food. Now to cut it.
Crispy skin.
Tablespoon.
2 eggs.
Sugar.
Delicious.
Best red wine.
Great to eat.
Vitamin C.
Low cooking.
Fresh.
2UE's Fresh for Sydney markets.
Cheers.